Well, this is going to be different. Have you ever gone through Costco in the television section and seen this label, Dolby Vision? Dolby Vision. Anybody ever see that? Well, my next guest was the patent holder for that. He's the inventor of Dolby Vision. He's just such an interesting guy. I had not interviewed him in a number of years, but he's an apologist, an engineer. He was born in Ghana and grew up in Sudan and Yemen, all of that. But Neil Mammon is a committed Christian. But his life is physics and computer engineering. I mean, he has like 4 startup companies in Silicon Valley. He co-founded. And he was issued 16 pending patents in various areas, from networking to traffic shaping. Anyway, he has a very interesting past, but here's Neil. Neil is a committed Christian. And when we talk today, he's using his engineering skills and his great mind to come up with brand new ideas to help Christians. It's really very interesting. So we're going to hear about his life story, then we're going to hear about these new in innovations that he's come up with, and you're going to enjoy this discussion. Well, Preborn is one of my favorite sponsors because of their concern for women who are in an unwanted pregnancy. And, of course, that's a great concern for me and has been for many, many years. It still breaks my heart when I consider what happens to a baby in its mother's womb when these invasive instruments or these poisons are, you know, administered and the babies are born in part torn apart, whatever way they come out. It's a terrible situation. Father Frank Pavone, in his speech yesterday, told some of the most horrible things they're doing in the clinics. And actually things I'd never heard of before, and I'm not even going to tell you what they're doing in the abortion clinics to disrespect those babies' bodies. But let me just say, it's a practice from the pit of hell. And so if you'd like to help stop that, I certainly would. I've been trying to stop it since I was in my 20s. And we're making progress. That's the thing about it. We're making progress. And certainly Preborn has come up with a way to discourage moms from going through abortion by using 4D ultrasound and showing them the pictures of their babies. And it is working. And it's working because it's life-giving. It's natural. It's a visual. It's God's way, I think. You see what you're going to do? Do you see this? You really want to go through it? Most moms say no. And that's why Preborn is so important, and that's why they sponsor our show. If you would like to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, sit back and relax and enjoy today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7 with this great interaction with Neil Mammon, his life story, and his great mind and how he's using that great mind to come up with innovations to help the church on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
All right, Sandy Rios with you again at the Liberty Pastors Retreat in Williamsburg, Virginia. And we're having a wonderful time here. I'll tell you more about it. This is the actual first day, and it's just phenomenal. Truly, it is phenomenal. It's an in-depth survey on not just America's foundings, which, of course, you know I know a lot about that. I talk about it to all of you. I try to teach you about that. But I'm learning so much about how the pieces are put together, about how we got here, and just stories about people that made an impact on our country and its future that I never heard about. And I'm telling you, it's wonderful. So if you're a pastor, you need to go to libertypastors.org and sign up for one of these camps. It really is fabulous. And they have great speakers like Robert Malone. Of course, Robert's been on my show a lot. Bill Federer, Bishop E.W. Jackson, such a great friend, just a powerhouse, and everybody on AFR at least certainly knows who E.W. Jackson is. Bobby Kuhn as a former congressman from Ohio. A lot more people here. Hang on a minute. I want you to know. It's just, Winsome Sears is coming because we're in Virginia and she's running for governor right now, so she'll be here. Kevin Freeman, who's a good friend of mine who's been on the show a lot too. He does this a show on the Blaze Media, Economic Warfare. That's the name of his show. And then Frank Provone, who we've talked to very frequently. He was with us in another podcast. And so sitting before me today is Neil Mammon. And Neil is new to this audience because I'm now doing a podcast, Neil. So you're a new guest. Neil is an apologist and engineer. I have interviewed him before, but it's been many, many years. He designs video and networking systems, computer chips, and boards with various U.S. and international engineering companies. He was born in Ghana and grew up in Sudan and Yemen. He came to the United States for college and at 20 earned his BSEE, Bachelor's of
Electrical Engineering.
In computer and, oh, there you go, it says it. At 22, he earned his master's in the same thing in solid state physics and computer engineering. He's co-founded 4 startup companies in Silicon Valley. He has 16 issued and pending patents in areas varying from networking, traffic shaping, and packet processing to LED local dimming TV methodologies. I think that's so interesting. I had to read all of it. So, Neil, I hope you make us smarter today. That's your task.
Oh, thank you.
To make us all smarter.
I'll try.
All right. Now, I want to go back in your past. Born in Ghana and grew up in Sudan and Yemen. So what is your nationality?
Well, I'm Indian by national origin.
That's what I thought. Okay, so you're Indian. But were you raised in that culture?
Well, it's a mixed culture. I was raised in the African/Indian immigrant culture in Sudan.
Yeah, but Yemen and Sudan are, well, Sudan, I guess, is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, because there are a lot of immigrants there and a lot of people who work there from India. So I had a fair smattering of Indian culture as well as the local culture.
But I think of Sudan and Yemen. I think of two of the most difficult places in the world, I would think, to live. Maybe that's because of things now. Maybe it wasn't always
that way. Yeah, yeah. So when we were there, I mean, in Sudan, it was under a dictatorship, but it was a secular dictatorship. So the churches were able to function easily.
So it was an Islamic, caliphate Sharia or whatever, law. Yeah.
Yeah, but when you went to Yemen, it was also a dictatorship, and it was a Sharia law dictatorship. So the churches were a lot more constrained there. You could, in fact, we ended up having to leave the country under threat of death because my father, a colleague of my father, had received a Bible, had taken a Bible from my dad's, and committed suicide shortly after, not related to the Bible, apparently. And when they went into his bedroom, they found the Bible with my father's name. And so my dad knew a lot of the people in politics at the time, and so they came to him quickly that night, and they said, one, we got to put you under guard, and two, we've got to get you out of the country within 2 weeks because the mullah's going to come after you. Because the punishment for converting or trying to convert somebody was stoning and death or execution by beheading.
It's such a nice system. So compatible with the West, right? Oh, Neil, I know, you know, when I interviewed you many years ago, we've been over this terrain, but forgive me, you're new to this audience and I can't remember. I have a bad memory. But so your parents, I know there are a lot of Catholic Christians in India. So what was your background religiously then?
So my St. Thomas, you know, the Apostle Thomas, Doubting Thomas, which is a good thing. If you don't doubt what you believe, then you'll end up a Muslim or a Hindu or a Hare Krishna, right? So you got to doubt what you believe and prove it. So I actually have a ministry called No Blind Faith. But he came to India in 51 A.D., and he converted a bunch of pagans there. So we date our ancestry to the Church of St. Thomas, Marthoma Church. Back to 51 A.D. So that's our heritage.
So that's really cool. I mean, that is really cool.
It's a funny story here. When I first met my father-in-law, my wife's a redhead from Oregon, he said, so how long has your family been Christian? And I said, a lot longer than yours.
I bet he loved that answer.
He thought it was funny.
he did. Oh, good. Thank goodness.
Because he was from, because, you know, their last name was Kent, so they're from England, and they only became Christians in like the 1200 or something.
That's right, yeah.
We've got a few thousand years over here.
Okay, there you go. Well, so were you, help me understand, these are not I don't think of Ghana and Yemen and Sudan as places where there are a lot of churches. So what were you doing for worship? I mean, were you Christian by in the broad sweep of the definition, or were you serious Christians who were in Bible study and fellowship and believed in the power of God and all of that?
Yeah, so my dad was actually an atheist and a communist till I was five, even though I grew up in a Christian extended family. We also, in the 50s, a lot of our family became communists, and so there were Marxists. We have three famous Marxists in our family. One was the head of the World Council of Churches for a while, which is social justice and all that. So I grew up in that atmosphere. My dad actually came to know the Lord when I was about five. Uh-huh. And so he actually ended up starting a church in Sudan and a church in Yemen.
Wow, so serious Christians.
Yeah.
How about you, Neil?
So,
I mean, you got this engineering mind and you know, think of all these things that other people don't think of. But did that mind, you know, just because your dad had that experience, didn't mean that you had that experience, but what happened for you?
Well, my dad was a professor in physics.
Okay.
And so when he became a Christian, it was only because of the evidence that led him to that. Yeah. So I grew up in an evidence-based Christian church. So I became a believer at the age of, you know, I always like to say I was a liar, a cheat, and had murder in my heart. But then I received Christ at the age of five. So.
No, I do understand that. I became a Christian at nine. I just turned nine. So, and I just still remember, I don't want to go into my story, but the conviction of the Holy Spirit. And, you know, what had I done? I mean, same thing. Well, I hadn't killed anybody, but I understood sin. Man, I could tell you things that I did were, you know, my mind, my attitudes, and I sure didn't want God in my life. Even at eight, nine, it's like, I'm not interested. I don't want that. You know, because it means surrender.
Yeah,
that's sin.
Yeah,
that's
we realize how depraved we are later on when we look at it and go, wow, if I had not received Christ, imagine, even today I see those urges. Imagine if I had not had Christ in my life, what it would have been like.
Yeah, and you realize what you were saved from.
Yep.
You know, I remember my mother and dad became Christians later, like 36 and 37. So I was a little girl. And it changed our home. But I remember when I got older, I had a lot of challenges. I had a severely disabled child and other things. And I remember asking my mother, as a matter of fact, I said, Mom, you know, people talk to me and they say, my daughter was severely disabled and it was a hard road.
I can imagine.
Very sick all the time and full care and all of that for 20 years. And so I said, Mom, I don't understand, Mother. People keep saying to me, I'm so strong, you know, and I said, I don't feel strong, and I don't know why they say that or they compliment me on how because I feel like I'm just hanging on. Of course I trust God, you know. And my mother said to me, she said, Sandra Kay, that's what she just called me, you don't know what it's like not to be a Christian. You've always been, since you were nine, you have lived and the word is in you, and that's why it's a natural response given how God has changed and made you. And so it's not like it isn't your personal strength. It is Christ in you. That was what I was asking. How do I know what part of it is like my personality, or is it, what is this? And so that helped me so much. It's the way I was made when I came to Christ, when I was reborn. So
yeah, and it's as I was talking, because I preach a sermon on why, how can God exist when there's so much evil in the world? And I get asked that question, you know, my dad died of cancer, that, and the other. And I said, it's not about this life.
No.
This life is a preparation for the next life. So what you're going through now, God is refining you, He's perfecting you. He knows exactly what you need. I'm hoping I need a lot less than I've had so far. But He does know what I need.
Yeah,
right?
Really. Well, you know, Dr. Irwin Lutzer, I bet you know who he is.
Yeah,
he's a good friend. He always says something about, like, I wish I could be as eloquent as he is. Here I go trying this. He says, Sandy, just remember that in this life, whatever is really bad for you now, that's as bad as it's ever going to get.
Yep, yep.
And for people who don't believe in Jesus, whatever they're going through now, it's as good as it's ever going to get.
Yep.
And so, anyway, all right. Well, so you majored in engineering.
Yep.
And what did you, I mean, you wanted to be an engineer, but what did you want to do? What thing did you think, I'd love to do this?
It's hard to say because, you know, when you're a kid, you're just like, oh, engineering, I want to design things and make things. And then you get into the business and you do it and you have a lot of fun doing it. So I've done, we did the first MP3 chip back in 1989.
Wow.
We did the first video transmission in 1994. I created a company called Nuco Information Systems where we were Netflix before Netflix. The reason it didn't fly is because in 1997 we needed 1.5 megabits to the home and Pac Bell couldn't deliver it, so our company went under. So, yeah, done a lot of fun stuff. One thing that you might know that I've done is if you go buy a TV at Costco that says Dolby Vision,
yes.
I'm the chief hardware architect for Dolby Vision.
For Dolby Vision?
Yeah.
Gosh, Neil, can you loan me some money? Because you must have a lot of money.
Yeah, sadly, though, Dolby owns all the patents. All those patents belong to Dolby.
You think about that, you should have put that in Neil Mammon's name. What's the matter with you?
As long as they were paying me a salary, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, I know. Patents, oh my goodness. Well, that's really very cool. So somewhere along the way, though, I remember the time I did interview you, I think it was on your book, Jesus is Involved in Politics. So when did you start, did you ever not kind of weave your Christian life with the things in the world that were going on that you were experiencing, or did that come later?
Well, I grew up in a home that thought Christianity and politics merged together, and so fortunately, okay. Some of them thought it was Marxism and Christianity.
Yeah, well, that's true. I never thought of, okay.
So it's an interesting mixture because in South India, a lot of Christians, a lot of Marxists. In fact, the state we come through is the most communist state, but it's only communist in the sense it's socialist because the government of India won't allow them to be communists. But it is the Communist Party that's ruling in the state of Kerala, which is our hometown. But there's a lot of Christians there, 20%, which is the largest number of Christians in any density in any state, 20% are Christians. But also that when I came here, I was kind of a socialist because I thought I misunderstood Christian charity to be government charity.
And yes, say that again because I think people do that.
I misunderstood Christian charity to be government charity.
Yeah, when we're supposed to help the poor, yes. Our government. Yeah, it's not. We don't abdicate that for government. That's
exactly.
What you're saying, yeah.
So as I was learning that in America and I was understanding the American principles, it hit me at one point that most Americans don't know that.
No, they don't because they haven't, unless they're older.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. They've seen it beforehand, right. So.
And it's funny. We have come so far, down. My husband and I were just watching a commercial last night and they were boasting on something being free. Everything's mm-hmm. free. Mm-hmm. Oh, we get the, and we didn't have to pay, and they can pay. We don't have to pay. And you know, when I was growing up, Neil, the world was so different. Is you didn't want people paying anything for you. You wanted to work by your own hand. You were mortified to be unemployed.
Yep.
And you didn't go get unemployment unless you were starving. You worked. You were self-sufficient. Boy, I think the socialism aspect has really polluted our thinking about that.
Well, it's a simple reason. The reason is, and we can talk about this, our solution to this. The simple reason is because the entire U.S. government public system, public education, the government education, was designed by socialists. It was by Dewey and Manning,
Dewey.
Right?
That's why I hated that textbook. I studied to be a teacher. I did. I hated studying education, and that might be the reason, because it just sounded like a bunch of nonsense to me.
Yeah, from these guys from the Frankfurt School. They're all from
From the Frankfurt School.
Well, they were trained. So the Frankfurt School, the guys from the Frankfurt School, Marcuse and all those guys, ended up in Columbia University. So Dewey and Manning, all these guys, come right out of Frankfurt University.
I didn't know that.
So with Cloven, you can trace all these bad things back to Columbia University. So Cloven and Piven and all that stuff. All
Cloward
these
Piven.
Cloward Piven, sorry,
the manufactured crisis.
All Columbia University people, right? So there's a trace that
Okay, so wait, we have to stop and explain this. You and I both know what we're talking about. The first time I heard about the Cloven-Piven strategy of manufactured crisis, which sounds like what, was when the left tried to shut down the social welfare system in the city of New York, and they did it by advertising that everybody could join, and they recruited people because they wanted to crash
the system.
And they actually went in and did a protest, a sit-in, and they expanded the eligibility, and they did actually crash the system in New York City. And Cloward Piven, the whole idea is to create a crisis, and that's why Rahm Emanuel, a couple of decades later, said something famous like, never waste a good crisis.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, sorry.
So the idea, here's the irony of that. So Cloward and Piven crash the system by doing exactly what they want the system to be. Everybody gets feeds off the government.
So who can fight against it?
Yeah. Well, but worse than that is they prove the system doesn't work by crashing the system.
That would be a good thing if people ever figured that out.
But they didn't figure it out. That's the irony of it, right?
Yeah. So that's what they do. It's like with immigration. That's what they still do. Yeah. That's the practice of the left.
Flood the system with immigration.
Destroy it.
It crashes. But that's what you want in the long term, isn't it? So why are you doing it and proving that it doesn't work? Oh, well, it'll show that it does. It'll show us that we'll get to power. So what they want is they want effective anarchy so they can take over with the oligarchy.
And I'd say the immigration system is part of that. It's like overwhelm.
Absolutely.
The system to destroy it so that...
Yeah.
It's funny. We should know these things so that we can see them. Now, are your family members still communists?
No. I would say my cousins, it's probably about 50-50. Some are really hardcore evangelical Christians, and some are, I mean, they're not communists in the sense of hardcore communists, but they're socialistic in thinking, which is funny because a lot of Indians in America are socialistic in thought, but capitalistic in principle.
You know what? I'm not going to mention the country because she's a really good friend. I'll just say I have a really good friend from a country in Europe. And it's embraced socialism for a long time, like England has, you know. And she is a strong believer, Bible teacher, but she is a socialist. And it's just the way she thinks. She doesn't understand why that's so unhealthy.
So this is one of the principles I talk in my book, Jesus is involved in politics, why aren't you, why isn't your church? And it's the whole concept of the difference between rights and goods. A lot of people don't understand that. They believe that government is there to provide you with goods. And why? The reason socialism doesn't work, the many reasons why it doesn't work. One, it has never worked. But the main reason it doesn't work and why the Bible doesn't teach it is because if you go throughout the Old Testament, there is never a time when the government is supposed to take care of the poor. You are supposed to personally, optionally take care of the poor. So, charity,
not the government.
Not
your
the government.
Is us.
You as an individual could individually choose to take care of the poor. Like even the gleaning, you could choose to allow people to glean. You're supposed
like
to.
Like Ruth and Boaz.
Yeah,
and
but there was no law that if you didn't allow people to glean, there was no law that would come in and shut you down because you didn't allow people to glean. It was more of a moral code. So what happens is that a lot of people mistake the difference between rights and goods. For instance, a good is something that requires somebody to work on. So a house is a good, all right? A gun is a good. I play a trick when I speak. I say, look, I'm going to show something to you. Tell me if it's a right or a good. And I show a gun. And everybody goes, oh, that's a right. Like, no. That's a good. You have a right to own the gun, but you have to buy your own gun. You have a right to own a house, but you have to buy your own house, right? So anytime something is a product of somebody's labor, you have to ask yourself, if I give that away for free, like healthcare or education, where am I going to get that education from? Am I going to beat a bunch of teachers and slap them into cuffs and chains and say, you got to teach my kids? No, you can't do that. So what we do instead is we enslave everybody, take 30% of their salary, and then pay for free education. So the difference is right. You have a right to an education, but you got to pay for your own education. The right to an education is a God-given right. The education itself is a service or a good. And a lot of people, a lot of pastors mistake that. A lot of Christians just mistake that. And they mix it. And all my cousins mistake that, right?
Yeah, right. Well, we're getting more of your cousins over here. So
Now,
let's talk about that. You know, the fabric of our country has changed so much because of immigration. You know that. Out of control immigration.
Yeah.
And so we have a communist Mondami running for mayor in the city of New York, and he's in first place.
Right, which is really scary.
So, honestly, Neil, I think that that's been unwise immigration policy, letting people into our country who don't have any respect for our system.
So the basis for U.S. So it took me 12 years to become a U.S. immigrant. And before I could become an immigrant, I had to understand the Constitution. I had to actually answer questions on the Constitution to the immigration. Back then it was called INS, right? Immigration Nationalization Services. And so I had to actually answer the questions. And here's what scared me when I answered the questions. I answered all the questions because I was a good student about it. I got the book and I read it and all that. And the officer looked at me like in amazement. He says, you know more than most Americans. And he almost gave me a hug. when he went, and I was like, wow. And that scared me. That's actually what was the impetus of writing the book, because I realized that, and then I would go out and talk to my friends, and they had no idea what the American Constitution was, what was based on, the difference between rights and goods. They had no idea of any of that. They thought we were a democracy, right? Which is the worst form of government ever. Well, not worst, but one of the worst forms.
It's one of the things where people are learning here.
Yes.
The pastor's conference, they're here learning about all these things.
How bad. In fact, the founders hated democracy.
Yes.
So this is the problem that I was facing when I wrote the book, and I didn't realize that most Christians. And then I realized most pastors were afraid of addressing it. That's why it's called, that's why it says, why aren't you, why isn't your church? Because most pastors didn't want to get involved in politics, so they bought into the Johnson Amendment lie from the 1957.
And the Johnson Amendment lie was that churches could not endorse candidates, and it's been in effect since 1947. Yeah, and it was just overturned about 2 months ago, or something like that. Yeah, so, so Neil, what are you doing now?
So I'm working on a couple of things. The first one, which I think is something, so as obviously with my love for churches and how important it is for pastors to be engaged in politics, and I asked pastors, as I said, go through all the prophets and tell me one job of the prophet that's not your job.
One job.
Of a prophet
of
that
a
is
prophet
not your job.
It's not your job. And there aren't any
things
of a prophet.
You know, are you supposed to be like Jeremiah by warning the nations? Are you supposed to be like Jonah by warning the king? Are you supposed to be like John the Baptist by calling up the king for... And I asked, I said, which one of you were calling out Bill Clinton for adultery when he did it in office, just like John the Baptist? Well, you don't think John the Baptist's job is yours? So one of the things we did is a gentleman named Roger Elswick approached me through Duran Reese, a mutual friend. You know, Duran Reese from Salt and Light.
Great. Yes,
So Duran said, hey, Roger approached Duran and said, we need to do a website so we can find the good churches, the churches that are involved politically, that are actively talking about homosexuality and abortion and all that, and that are 100% biblical. And so Duran said, oh, you got to talk to Neil. He's the technologist here. So Roger calls me up, and we created mychurchfinder.org, not .com, mychurchfinder.org. And you can go there and look for a church that, and we've rated the churches, A, B, and C. A means that they're politically active, they talk about homosexuality, and they're biblical. B means that they just talk about the issues, but they don't ask you to get involved in them, and you're biblical. And C means you're just biblical. So that way, if you're in a new area, you can go to mychurchfinder.org and find a church that meets the requirements that you think they should be in. We think everybody should be in eight churches. Now, we just started a year ago, so we only have about 450 churches, but we've come up with a new system. You can go to our website and invite a pastor. So just say you go to a great church and you think your pastor should be on our website. You send him an email, or you can, let's say you're visiting and you want to find out about a local church, you can go to our website, type in the name of the church, type in the city that the church is in. Our system will find the email address for the pastor, and we'll send an email saying, your pastor, fill out the survey for My Church Finder, and when they fill it out, we'll let you know about their church and where they stand on it. So we'd like a million people to go on our website and ask a million different people. There are about 115,000 evangelical churches. The other thing we do is we also went on saying we scraped the web to find all the woke and gay and homosexual, pro-homosexual churches, and we've listed them already. So if you're wondering about a local church and you're saying, well, I wonder if they're woke, go to our website, mychurchfinder.org, put in the name of the church and the city, and it'll tell you if it's a woke church. It'll tell you if it's a gay-friendly church. You know, like it does not. I mean, we all are gay-friendly in the sense that we love homosexuals to come to our church, but we're not going to say that what you're doing is okay.
We don't have one in the pulpit or on the organ. Neil, how do you do all this? Do you do this by AI? Do you get your information, really?
No. The pastor has to fill out the form.
Oh, but I mean, in general, all of this stuff is...
We use AI a lot. But the AI is more used to find out what the pastor's email is. We got to dig up the pastor, go down to the church. But most of it really is we send the pastor an email. He has to fill out a survey. And then we analyze the survey. And if he gets the questions wrong, if he says there is no objective moral law or homosexuality is okay, then we know where he stands, right?
That's a great service because people everywhere struggle to find a good church.
Exactly.
It's hard to find a good church. And, of course, what people think is a good church is different from different people.
Absolutely.
But I think biblically based and talking about all of the totality of life through Scripture. I mean, it has to be that.
Yeah.
Or it's just not satisfying. It isn't.
Well, because people are seeking to be led. I mean, if you're going to be a prophet, the prophets told people how to live their lives according to the Bible. That wasn't their own opinion. It was the biblical opinion. Let me speak truth into your life. You know that if you look at the Bible, very few, maybe 10 to 15% of the prophets predicted the future. The rest of them predicted the future if you disobeyed God.
Well said.
Right?
Well, I always heard when I was growing up that a prophet, the definition of prophet was someone who told forth, foretold, or it could be someone who just told forth.
Yeah.
So not necessarily
absolutely.
The future, yeah.
So
who's your favorite prophet?
Oh, gosh. I think Jeremiah, because this is the guy that, you know, I wasn't thrown in a well like him, but I was blacklisted in the Silicon Valley. I was pretty much kicked out of my profession because people would look online and see what I was saying. And so a few years ago, we actually had to live, after being there for 38 years, I was blacklisted, couldn't get a job.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So,
I'm glad you told me that's a big part of your story.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I didn't ask the right question to
think. No. It's not something I tell everybody. But yeah, so I got Jeremiah in a sense. I'm hoping I won't be in the well like he did.
Well, hopefully you'll be like Joseph, who was thrown in jail, yeah, and then he came out and
exactly.
was put in charge of a lot of big things.
So let me tell you the other project I'm working on.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, we talked about the Dewey and Manning and the school, the socialist school.
Right.
So it turns out there's about 23 million, we think it's an estimate, about 23 million kids in public schools today, in government schools. Government indoctrination, socialism. Being indoctrinated with that socialism.
Now, is this K through 12 or
K through 12?
Okay.
Through 12. So, and the problem is that both their parents work, so they can't homeschool. Homeschool is the best form of education. If you can afford to keep one parent home, homeschool. We chose to homeschool. My wife used to be a public school teacher for 10 years. When we had our first daughter, homeschool, right? So
yeah.
Homeschooled all our kids, right? So, and it's a trial now because, you know, I don't have a job, regular job, and I have to consult and things like that. So so what we're doing is we've created something called Revive Academies. And what a Revive Academy is, allows you to get a mom who's a homeschool tutor to tutor your kids 2 days, 3 days, 5 days a week at a local church. So let me give you the example of this. We call ourselves the Uber of schools. Uber does not own the cars. Uber does not hire the drivers, and Uber does not tell the parents where to go to school or where to travel, right? And when to travel. So what we do is if you go to our website, reviveacademies.com.
Reviveacademies.com.
And I only say this now because we're not ready. We're looking for actually three churches. We've already prototyped one church, but we want to prototype it at three more churches this year. So if you want to be one of those churches, let me know. Send me an email at neil@reviveacademies.com or org will work too. Reviveacademies.com, Neil, N-E-I-L. So what we're doing is, so basically a church goes onto our website, onto our app, and says we are available. We have, say, five rooms during the week can hold 15 students or 20 students or whatever, different sizes of classrooms. But we don't want to get involved in W-2s. We don't want to hire teachers. We don't want to do all that. And a lot of parents, even when Christian schools are founded, they're like $15,000 a year. It's way too expensive. So what they do is they go on and they log in and they say, this is what we have, they sign the statement of faith. Tutors, let's say you're a homeschool mom and you're like, I'd like to earn some money. So what you do is you go online, you say, I'm a homeschool mom, I'd like to be a tutor. You sign the statement of faith, then you go online and you look for a church that's nearby that's offering a classroom. And you say, click on it, and it sets up a meeting with the pastor. The pastor has to okay you, or the church has to okay you. Once the church has okayed you, then you show up on our website as these are the classes live in person, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday, whatever you want. And the parents can then assign their kids to it. They have a meeting with you too, again online, and they approve you. They make sure you like them, and you make sure as a tutor you like them. And then it's $25 a day, huh. Right? So a whole school year, if you send 5 days a week, it's only $4,500 a year.
Wow.
Right? So it's very affordable. And a lot of churches have said, look, we'll pitch in not only the room, but we'll also pitch in some money for every kid that comes here. Guess what? Because from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock, the kids, you can teach them other things like apologetics or archery or music or choir. And guess what? These people might come end up going to your church after a while, so it's a good incentive. But here's where it's attractive to homeschool moms. If you're a homeschool mom and you have two kids and you decide, I'm going to teach a full class of 20 kids, which you could do easily, because homeschooling is, you know, if you're a homeschool mom, you know how to handle that, right? So we don't charge you for your own kids, but you just bring in the other kids in this classroom setting, and we've done a background check of all the tutors. You can make $90,000 a year.
Oh, my word.
And as a 1099. And by the way, the parents pay the teacher directly, so the church is not involved. It's just a ministry of the church.
Wow. That's amazing. What a great concept. And you're just starting this?
We're just starting it. We're looking for three churches to prototype it. The software is ready. I'm looking for three churches that want to say, hey, we want to do it. We want to get involved. And you, in fact, churches can assign the teachers. They can say, hey, we don't want to take in tutors. We have people in our congregation ready to do it. Bring them in.
Wow, that is just an absolutely wonderful idea.
So Neil at reviveacademies.com.
Okay, Neil.
Academies.
Academies. Okay. All right. And the other one was mychurchfinder.org.
Just go there and you'll find everything.
All right. That's great. Those are two great entities. Your engineering mind is still working. So
thank you.
Eat your heart out, Silicon Valley. Neil Mammon, it's really a pleasure
to
have this time with you. Thank you for joining me and thank you for sharing your story.
It's
inspiring.
I appreciate it.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
The FDA finally approved the French abortion pill, and again, there's two pills. They okayed the first one, mifepristone, for chemical abortions up to 7 weeks. Later, that was extended to 10 weeks under Barack Obama. And then under Joe Biden, they opened the door to the FDA approving of mifepristone prescriptions online, through the mail, and without any kind of supervision. And the Supreme Court upheld that unanimous ruling just in 2024. It really is despicable. I'm telling you, it is despicable, given the number of injuries, 10% or so of women who have these chemical abortions, not to mention the loss of life, the trauma of delivering at home. It is a disgraceful thing that our country has done. But Preborn is trying to provide a redemptive way to stop it. They have a pill that can actually reverse that first pill. And the first one is mifepristone. So if a mother has second thoughts when she takes that first pill, if she gets to a preborn clinic, they can stop that. But if she takes the second pill, which expels the baby, it's too late. And that's why we're trying to educate women, not educate. I hate that. Just really too sterile. We're trying to move their hearts by showing them their baby in utero through ultrasound. That's what preborn does. That's the emotional trigger, which is genuine and real from the heart of God. That's a baby. And when women see that, they don't take these abortion pills. It stops it before it begins. But both things have to be addressed, and that's what preborn does. If you would like to help, it's $28 for one ultrasound. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And please make your most generous donation.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, I told you you would enjoy it. Wasn't he engaging? And isn't it exciting, these new innovations he's come up with? I encourage you to look into each and every one of them. Well, we're finished for today, but before we go, Timothy Plan is doing such great things. I was just talking to Art Allies here today. He's the founder. And I just told him, I said, because he's sponsoring this whole conference. And he's using his money well. And I think that deserves praise. So he also sponsors this show. And I remember when he started Timothy Plan, that's probably 25 years ago, I'm guessing on the time. But I was in the audience, and I remember him presenting it. It was this fresh idea about Christians using their money, you know, investing their money into things that did not do harm or were biblically really abhorrent. And so they've been so successful, and that's what they want to do for you. So if you haven't called Timothy Plan, you might want to do that and think about how you are spending your money. Go to 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Or go to timothyplan.com. That's timothyplan.com. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.